And finally, our last presenter is Jo Hocking from the State Library of South Australia. Jo has worked in collection development at the State Library of SA for the past 12 years, and there's a lot in her bio. She does many things there, but one of the roles she has there is to coordinate the selection and harvesting of the South Australian websites into the National Library of Australia's Pandora Australian Web Archive. So, no further ado, come and talk about it.
Okay, excellent. Well, thank you for giving me the opportunity to be here to talk all about websites. In 1995, the State Library of South Australia preserved its first website, the Australian Formula One Grand Prix. It was the final year Adelaide hosted the event before it moved to Melbourne, generating record levels of spite towards the Victorian border. We didn't have a web crawler, but we did have a deskjet printer and archival paper. Oh, yes. Do I point that anywhere? All right, yep, here we go. So, yes, here it is. The Grand Prix website. Bound and stored with our South Australiana B-size books. And here are the highlights. The first page over on the left. The home page with the hand-drawn menus on the bottom. That's the second one up the top. One of about six maps of the track that really hasn't translated all that well in the printing. Media releases, icons, a counter, and some very, very grainy pictures over there on the right. Now, seeing all of these components that make a website so inherently electronic, the term that comes to mind is lost and found. We can see what's missing as well as what's being saved. Today's presentation will investigate the similar concept of what South Australian online content has been lost and what the State Library has saved. I'm presenting this in terms of search and rescue. The first part of the presentation, search, will address the idea of websites as vulnerable born digital artifacts by determining whether websites are truly lost from the web. The second part of the presentation, rescue, we'll examine the value of the online content the State Library has salvaged. Then I'll quickly present a few strategies for negating the impediments we face archiving the web in South Australia. Things have moved on a bit since our deskjet printer days. Since 1999, the State Library has been a partner agency in the National Library's web archive Pandora, in conjunction with most of the state libraries around Australia. Each partner applies their own criteria, which for us and most of the other libraries with the software we have means a focus on content rather than experience, interactivity or innovation. This is why archiving websites is seen as a librarian job rather than an IT job. We operate within our legislative framework. South Australia is held hostage by federal copyright law and legal deposit provisions of the South Australian Libraries Act 1982, which at this point do not permit copying and republishing of online material without permission from website owners. Under these conditions, we've archived 2,600 titles, over 7 million files, and around 350 gig of websites, serials, and monographs, and by that I mean like online newsletters and reports, from 1999 to the end of 2013. Now, these statistics are excellent for annual reports, but they're centred around the copies that we've made. What about the afterlives of the original websites? The popular notion is that websites are vulnerable to loss, and thus cultural institutions have to preserve them to ensure access for researchers. Is this really true? Are we actually saving South Australian websites from total internet extinction? Or can researchers find them in other ways? These questions go right to the heart of our motivations for preserving online content. So I ran an experiment to see if I could locate a sample of South Australian archived websites via other means on the internet. Surmising that the earliest sites archived were most at risk of loss, I selected the period of our first 10 years in Pandora, from 1999 to the end of 2008. I concentrated solely on websites, deliberately excluding monographs and serials. The total number of sites from this period was 260. This figure was relatively spartan, given that we now archive more than that in about 6 months, but the compact size meant I could pursue three different strategies in my quest to find the lost websites. Firstly, were the sites still online at the last URL we had? Secondly, were the sites online at a new URL? Thirdly, were the sites available in another public web archive? My first approach was to determine how many of our URLs in the sample had succumbed to link rot, meaning that our last URL didn't work or the site was no longer there if the URL did work. The Chesapeake Digital Preservation Group in the US annually analyses two samples of data in their legal resources web archive for link rot. They run one test on their oldest 576 URLs from 2007 and 2008, and the other on their entire archive. The most recently published 2013 study found that 44% of its 2007 and 2008 URLs had succumbed to link rot. Their figure for the entire archive was 36.7%, by the way. My approach was similar in testing the oldest URLs. When a random check on the homepage of Peter Lewis, our former Speaker of the South Australian Parliament, revealed an accounting company, I knew an automated link checker was out of the question. So I got the coffee cranking and commenced the cutting and pasting into my browser. I considered URLs automatically redirecting to new URLs as still online, since they still provided access to the correct material. And the results for our 10-year sample? Out of 260 titles, 92, or 35.38%, succumbed to link rot. This was a tad lower than Chesapeake's 44%, but still in the ballpark. Perhaps Chesapeake's legal resources disappeared quicker from the web, given the risks for providing outdated legal advice. This graph shows the years that link rot set in. Blue is for link rot, and green is for sites still online in 2014 at the same URL. In the early years, the percentage of link rot is reasonably high, although we don't have that many sites gathered, as will be obvious up there. Overall activity went up substantially in 2008, skewing our percentage in favour of URLs still online. Now, I hate to brag, but I started managing the State Library's Pandora activity that year, 2008, so I know what was going on. I selected sites of state-level significance, major sporting teams, festivals, and political parties, likely to commit to an enduring URL. For example, the Adelaide Crows URL was not going anywhere, a bit like their performance at the moment. That doesn't mean I'm a Port supporter, by the way. If you recall, Chesapeake's link rot figure for their 2007-2008 sites was 44%. Ours was 26.92% for these years. I think that if we search for post-2008 URLs in a few years, we'll find a higher rate of link rot for the sites of small clubs or setups or personal blogs that we archive more frequently these days. But this wasn't enough. Businesses, government departments, clubs and organisations change their URLs for various reasons, such as mergers, swapping to free blogs or Facebook pages, evacuating sinking ship ISPs, or changing business names. So what if the 35% of our URLs succumb to link rot? Does this really matter if researchers can find the site in a 2-second Google search? Which brings us to part two of our search for the lost websites. Were the sites online at another URL? Had they simply changed address? I ran Google searches on publishers or names of the 92 sites no longer at our last URL. I did not count Facebook pages since they differed in format, content and intellectual property from a standard website, but I did count sites that changed to blogs. Of the 92 sites that no longer worked on our original URLs, 19 were online at another address. These were mainly major bodies with a name change, such as the Telstra Adelaide Festival, which has since dispensed with Telstra, the Experimental Art Foundation, which is now the Australian Experimental Art Foundation, and the South Australian branch of Family First, which is one of our major political parties, which has changed URLs a few times. The remaining 73 URLs, constituting 79.5% of the missing URLs, were indeed gone from the live web. So now we come to the third part of our three-pronged search. Of our 92 sites with URLs that no longer work, how many have been captured in another web archive? Has another organisation cut our lunch, so to speak? In 2011, Old Dominion University conducted a study asking how much of the web is archived. They obtained a sample of URLs from Delicious, Bitly, and the Open Directory Project and ran them through numerous public web archives, finding that up to 90% of URLs sampled had at least one copy in a web archive. Those in the Internet Archive had the best coverage and depth. Now, for those that don't know, the Internet Archive was established in 1996 and is the biggest publicly accessible web archive. Through its Wayback Machine, it provides free access to over 373 billion archived web pages. It was clearly the place to search for our lost sites, particularly since the National Library don't provide access to their own annual crawl of the .au domain. I entered the 92 missing original URLs into the Wayback Machine, searching for archive versions from the same year we archived them to Pandora. I found 77 sites had been archived, although six didn't have harvest matching our specific year. Taking this into consideration, that means there were 77.17% of our sites in the Internet Archive with the same year archived. Reminding ourselves that Old Dominion found up to 90% of sites with one archive copy somewhere, this statistic is not so surprising. So we have three statistics. 35% of the original links succumb to Linkrot. 79% of the sites, once at those rotted links, were no longer online as websites, and 77% of the rotted links were in the Internet Archive with at least one harvest from the same year in which we archived it. So out of those original 260 sites, how many can we say that the State Library has truly saved from disappearing from the web entirely? 10. Only 10 out of 260. 3.85%. of the sites painstakingly captured can only be found in Pandora. That's one in the eye for job satisfaction. I could potentially be selling the big issue next week if our libraries board saw that stark figure without any context. So why do we bother? That brings us to the second part of my presentation, rescue. Given that we found most of the missing sites live or archived, we need to examine the value of what we've rescued via Pandora. Firstly, we've rescued the files themselves. This means that the files are saved on Australian servers, and responsibility for preservation actions such as migration or normalisation lies with the National Library. Secondly, we can't rely on the Internet Archive to do it for us. We need to rescue this material ourselves. A selective web archive like Pandora has a human-mediated workflow of selecting, negotiating, harvesting, fixing, publishing, and describing. In contrast, the Internet Archive crawlers sweep broadly and publish indiscriminately. In these lists, you can see some of the benefits of human mediation, such as manual uploads of missing content, discovery mechanisms like cataloging, and most importantly, fixing of problems. The point to labour is that the Internet Archive sites are published, warts and all. And it is to these warts that we now turn. I examined 77 of our sites captured by the Internet Archive. As you can see from these screenshots, some sites were never really there in the first place, even though the calendar view allows you to click a date of harvest. For a bit of context, robots.txt, as written up there in red, robots.txt is a file that site owners put in their websites to tell crawlers to go away. It's effectively a declaration that they do not want their website archived. The Internet Archive obeys these files in its crawls. However, the Pandora software overrides them because it assumes we won't be archiving websites if we don't have permission. That's just how our system's configured. The following slides compare the same site in Pandora with the same site in the Internet Archive. So, on the left, we have the Pandora harvest for the website of Michael Harbison, Adelaide's former Lord Mayor and Liberal candidate. Contrast this with the Internet Archive's harvest on the right, and you can see that there's a serious image problem. Harbison is not alone. Seven other sites in our sample look similar to this. So, wart number two. the Music Teachers Association of South Australia. Note the menu navigation on the left. Note the total absence of menu navigation on the right. And I've clicked through to those live links just to check it out, and you actually can't get through to the rest of the site via that way either. This ebook was archived in 2005. The splash page looks the same in both archives. They stepped into a lost civilization and disturbed the balance of power. Their destiny is unknown as they hope for an escape. Their destiny will remain unknown to anybody using the Internet Archive. Finally, anybody from South Australia will remember Albert Ben Simon, who had a string of annoying commercials for Shields Jewellery with the catchphrase, "No hoo-ha." He ran in a state election in 2002, which is why this website was created. Whilst there was no hoo-ha in the Internet Archive, there was some ooh-la-la. His site kept directing to porncritics.com, which had then been subsequently archived and made accessible. Fine. No images of Albert Porn Simon himself, thankfully, but some pretty bad stuff nonetheless. Since these Pandora harvests are old, I can't tell whether we fixed them to a standard, but the point is that if Pandora harvests were ever as bad as some of these Internet Archive captures, we'd fix them or we wouldn't publish them at all. Thus, we cannot rely on the autopilot of the Internet Archive for archive sites of a high standard. Suddenly, our Pandora harvests are looking pretty good. They've rescued material that the Internet Archive never actually captured or could not make accessible. One of our collecting priorities is South Australian federal and state elections, casting the net widely for candidates and parties. South Australia went to the polls in 2002, 2006, and there was a 2008 by-election for the federal seat of Mayo. Out of the 260 sites, 76 concern South Australian politics or elections. This reflects the relatively short lifespans of sites created in the lead up to a single event, as much as our collecting focus in targeting this material. After all, the more fringe the party or candidate, the more likely that their website will be the only record of their existence, since they might not have a budget for printed material. Much of the material concerns candidates that didn't make the cut, some of whom ran on single issues. We have Albert Ben Simon, our favourite, who advocated that Porky Telling Pollies should be outed and fined for their misdemeanours. He would have been popular if he'd got in. Or Bill Spragg's Stop Population Growth Now party. The Republican Party wanted to be the tip of the javelin at the doors of the Parliament House. But the Hemp Party encouraged us all to chill out before overthrowing the government. There were also candidates running as independents, including Brian Deegan, who ran against Alexander Downer in his federal seat of Mayo in 2004. His son was killed in the Bali bombings, and he was an avid critic of Howard's foreign policy. He ultimately ran second in the electorate, which was quite a big deal. And there can be no mistaking the intention behind the South Australian Trades and Labour Council site, getridofhoward.org. Some of the most important material we've rescued pertains to the Democrats who were quite prominent in South Australia during the period of the sample, but are now on political life support. Firstly, we have harvests of the state site from 2002 and 2006, and a few years outside the period of sample as well. We also have harvests of the South Australian leaders, Natasha Stott Despoja and Meg Lees. If you recall, it was Meg Lees who infamously did a deal with John Howard to leave us with GST, so we're talking material of quite high political import. Finally, timeliness plays a big role in rescuing unique online content that might be removed from a site even though the site itself endures. A large proportion of our sites are event-based, such as elections and festivals. We tend to set gather dates prior to elections to ensure the sites are grabbed, but for festivals or other events, we set dates a few weeks after to capture content from the day, such as videos, photos, or results. For sports teams, we archive shortly after finals time. This ensures that researchers will be able to answer questions like, how do I find the average lap time for Holden's and the Clipsal 500 for 2010? Information that might not be online anymore, even if the site is still there. Sometimes the producer informs us that their site is about to be decommissioned, and we set a gather to capture the old website and then the new one. We also regularly review the frequency of archiving sites. In contrast to the Internet Archive, which harvests every 6 to 18 months, we set a once-off gather for something with a novelty factor or unchanging content. We set most events, festivals or major bodies on annual gathers that are evaluated a year later. Our efforts in Pandora have not been in vain. We've rescued unique content, presented it in an accessible fashion and stopped it turning into porn. So how can we rescue more information? The legislation requires us to ask permission, from every copyright holder before we commence archiving, which slows the process considerably. We're working on an alternative interpretation of our Legal Deposit Act, which would allow us to archive websites without permission, but not republish them, so this is really a bit of a lame duck victory. We've also arranged for the head of our government department to email other heads of departments to sign a blanket permission to archive their online publications. These are starting to trickle in as we speak. Given the results of this study, we could examine the Internet Archive for decent gathers of old essay sites no longer online that we'd have no chance of getting permission ourselves and link to them in the catalogue. Whilst this wouldn't rescue any content, it would promote awareness and access. Another issue is that the National Library provides the software and the storage, but this means we lose access to the raw data once archived, the ability to make decisions about the future of our state's material, and do not control the software as true system administrators. So we've been trialling in-house web archiving using open source software. But I can't really talk too much about that because I've got no time, and plus it's an active project we haven't quite concluded. Finally, usage statistics on our archived websites are difficult to determine since Pandora doesn't break usage down to a state level. Ironically, it's easier to measure the use of our Grand Prix website printout than our archived websites. This is a shame because usage statistics are sexy numbers that can make cases for resourcing. But as with other born digital material and collections, the value of archive sites might not be apparent until many years in the future, and thus usage statistics might be low now. I think we have to find ways to drive use up, then tailor a way to measure it. We have to encourage people to access web archives rather than abandon their search when they can't find outdated information on the live web. Maybe we could target groups who can find value in the oldest websites now, such as journalists who might find ammunition from politicians' early years to make a point right now. And have you seen that picture of a young Joe Hockey campaigning against university fees that's recently surfaced and humiliated him? Websites contain even more potential gold than that because a lot of it is from the horse's mouth. I also wonder if we could harness the open data trend with a scholarship, residency program, or a prize for best article, project, or use of archive websites in a similar fashion to GovHack. To conclude, I long for the day when every librarian from the twin setters to the hipsters refer customers to web archives as back issues of the internet as they would back issues of a journal. This will hopefully come with time and we will see greater use of the material that we have rescued. Thank you for listening and I wish you well in your own born digital quests.